March 12, 2012, in Ljubljana, open questions, answers. If this is just going to be discussion, why don't we come closer? I'm not armed. See, that's why I didn't want to sit up here. Makes distance. Okay, so this is just general open. It will go for just half an hour. They've got to travel early in the morning. So, anybody have anything they want to talk about? Yes, Prabhu.
You mentioned in your lecture about if you are, we are in Tamaguna, then we are cheating, then in Rajaguna we are pay.
Ah.
About Asha.
Uh-huh.
You gave this lecture on Naladesh, I think.
Okay.
So, many of us not yet properly situated even in Asha.
Okay.
So, I can accept that. The time, if you are not situated in ashram properly, then you are a disturbance for society.
Okay.
Yeah, and I personally, I can accept that.
You can or you can't?
I can.
Okay.
But many devotees can't accept.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You live, like example, you live with parents,
right.
You live with parents and you won't be married? No, why? Why should I be married?
Well, there is some facility, like Gopal Bhatta Goswami and I think Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, they took care of their parents and then they took up the renounced order. So you could say they never went to the Grihastha ashram. But they were certainly, although they were serving their parents and they were home, they were not trying to enjoy the situation. So everybody is free to accept whatever they want to accept. There's no compulsion that anyone has to accept something they don't want to accept. If you don't want to accept something, don't accept it. I mean, there's consequences, but that's another question. If we don't accept what Krishna says in the third chapter, then we'll suffer. And we may wonder why we're suffering, but what can you do? Krishna says if you don't accept sacrifice, then your life is led in vain. What do you want to say? We do have a problem that we have many people who really don't fit anywhere. This is a serious problem. So my response to that is, at least don't steal from the other ashrams and try to be Krishna conscious in the situation that you have. See, I don't know if everybody here heard that class you're referring to, so a lot of people here might just be lost and bewildered as to what in the world we're talking about.
Yes, I think Prema Gopi suggested and put on an email for Slovenia Forum.
Looking over. It's basically we're talking about vikarma, karma, and akarma. I mean, the principle is just very simple that there's each of the ashrams and each of the varnas also has particular pleasures, and to enjoy those pleasures, then you have to do the corresponding sacrifice. That's just karma. If you try to enjoy the pleasures without doing the corresponding sacrifice, that's vikarma, which means you're stealing. It's like you're taking something from a store without paying for it. So karmakanda is you take from the store and you pay for it. So at least we should be karmakanda. I mean, that's a pretty low level. But if we're functioning on vikarma, that's really sad. Now, can you advance in bhakti yoga if you're on the platform of vikarma in your activities? It's possible. Bhakti yoga is not dependent on material circumstances, but pretty hard. You're basically knocking a bunch of holes in your boat. So it's possible. But you're really making things difficult. I mean, Krishna can do anything. You know, he's not hampered by this thing or that thing. But that's not generally the way it works. It's hard to have a loving relationship with Krishna when you're stealing from him. At least you got to be paying for it. But we want, you know, then higher than that is you start being interested in the person you're paying rather than just paying. Just paying. You go to the shop and you don't care about the people who run the shop and you don't, you know, you're just paying your money. I mean, you may smile at somebody, but you don't really have a relationship. So that's karmakanda. Then higher than that is the idea that we have a relationship with the owner of the shop. That I'm paying my sacrifice to somebody who is giving me what I want to enjoy. So I start thinking about the person. And gradually I start relishing the exchange more than the thing that I'm getting. And gradually I start relishing the person more than the exchange. But if there's not even any exchange going on, and it's a little hard to get to that platform. So we're at a big disadvantage because the society that surrounds us is made up of thieves. So in the modern society, people want to enjoy the pleasures of the grihastha ashram and the pleasures of the renounced ashram at the same time without paying the sacrifice for either. Right? Do you understand what I'm saying? They want to enjoy a man or enjoy a woman without marrying them and having babies and earning money and taking care of a house. So that they keep their freedom of being single, which is the main pleasure of the renounced ashrams, freedom and simplicity. So they get the freedom and simplicity of the renounced ashrams without paying for that. How do you pay for that? You're renounced. You don't have your own money. You don't have your own house. You're not subtly or grossly enjoying the opposite sex. And they want the pleasures of the grihastha ashram without paying for those. So we bring that mentality into Krishna consciousness, which is, you know, understandable. And then we flavor it with Krishna consciousness and call it renunciation, which is very interesting. You know, well, I'm really renounced grihastha. I'm not going to have kids. I'll fool around with my wife or husband, but I'm not going to have kids. I'm not going to earn a livelihood with an honest livelihood. I'll just go do something illegal so I can, you know, I'll spend half the year in India. I'll renunciate. You know, or yes, okay, I'll be a renunciate, but I'm going to have my own bank account. And when I play the mridanga, I'm going to watch how the women are looking at me. Etc. You know, I'm going to apparently be a sannyasi and at least on the subtle platform live like a polygamous king. Maybe on the gross platform too, we find out after a while. So, it doesn't work. The problem with stealing is that if you try to enjoy something without doing the proper sacrifice, everything becomes a sacrifice. You actually don't get any pleasure out of it. Even materially, you don't get any pleasure out of it. Your life is just all miserable. And the irony is, if you happily, joyfully pay the sacrifice, especially if you do it with love for Krishna, then Krishna says everything merges into transcendence and even the sacrifice becomes joyful. There's no more sacrifice anymore. It disappears. So if you want to steal, there's no pleasure. It's all sacrifice. And if you happily sacrifice, it becomes all pleasure. Even the sacrifice becomes pleasure. Also, if you do the varnas and the ashram properly, because it's a scientific system designed by God, it works. So if you're actually a brahmachari when you're meant to be a brahmachari, and you're actually grahasta when you're meant to be a grahasta, and you're actually a vanaprastha when you're meant to be a vanaprastha, then you actually progress in detachment and bhakti. It's so cool. If you actually do it. And if you fake it, if you try to be a renunciate when you're a grahasta, and you try to be a grahasta when you're a renunciate, you don't get any benefit out of anything. And then it doesn't work. And then there you are, 60 years old, going, oh my God, now I got to do this, now I got to do that, now I got to do this, now I got to do that. I have this unfulfilled desire, and this unfulfilled need, and this problem, and that problem. But that's a whole other class. 7 minute summary.
Yeah.
But anyway, if you don't want to accept it, don't accept it. You know, it's not like, accept it. If you want to accept it, don't accept it. What to do?
I asked a similar question on Swamiji, and he told me I stopped looking at color. Shatran, white, but I just looking how many the person, how much the person do it for Krishna.
Very nice. Very nice. Something else? Yes?
Before you were speaking about how to act if we are leaving the temple and if we are too overloaded with the service and we still have our lunch, and the question is that sometimes can happen that we use this as this excuse, and how much service we should actually do if we live in the temple.
Arjuna used Krishna consciousness as an excuse too, Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said Arjuna used Krishna consciousness as an excuse not to be Krishna conscious. Krishna, I can't do what you say because that will then I'll commit sin. Look, you know, we've got to be adults here. We're supposed to be adults. I don't see any children here. We're supposed to be grown-ups. If you want to live in a temple, then hopefully you want to live in a temple because you want to dedicate your life to Krishna and you're not looking for excuses to be lazy. Prabhupada says, no crazies, no lazies in the temples. And he told one devotee, better an empty barn than a barn full of crazy cows. So, you know, if the managers have to be able to say to somebody that only wants to do, you know, 10 minutes of service a day, that this is not the appropriate place for you. Living in a temple means that you're willing to put in, you know, as much time in the temple as you would put in at a job. And if you're not willing to do that, you don't belong here. You belong someplace else. You have to be honest. Come on. Now, if you're the manager, you're supposed to make sure, it's hard because there's so much to do and there's not enough people, but you have to make sure that everybody gets their spiritual life and also that they do some service for the temple. And you should try to engage people according to their abilities as much as you can. I mean, you know, if we're talking about ourselves, how do I know, you know, using as an excuse for what? If I'm reading Prabhupada's books for 3 hours a day, I mean, is there something wrong with that? If I'm just sleeping, that's something else. You understand? This is expert management in individual, working with individuals. And it's hard. You know, we're not always going to get it right. So there has to be a conversation between the managers and the devotees, each devotee, and try things. And you have to be able to go to the leaders and say, this is really working for me, or this is not working for me. And the leaders have to be able to go to you and say, this is not working for me. And then the leaders also have to be able to go to you and say, this is, sorry. One interesting thing that they're doing in Hungary is looking at levels of membership and kinds of membership. Because what they were finding was that people would live in a temple for 5 years or 6 years and then feel that ISKCON owed them everything for the rest of their life. So they've now, I'm not saying their system is perfect, they're working on it, but they're trying to come up with a system where they recognize that most people will only stay in a temple for a certain number of years. And that until you reach the point where you actually make a contract, then nobody owes anybody anything. I think you have to be living in a temple at least 5 years, 5 to 10 years, before they'll make some sort of a contract. And they have a really nice system. I asked them to email me the details of it. I think first you can come, I'm not getting it exactly right, but first you can come and get a weekend of training, and then you get a certificate, and there's a ceremony. So instead of there's something wrong with you that you only can stay for a weekend, there's something right with you that you graduated from the course. And then you have to reapply. If you want to stay longer, you have to reapply. It's not automatic. And then you get considered for the next amount of time. I don't know what it is, maybe like 2 weeks of another course. And they say also this allows the leaders to see who's really suited for living in the temples. And you get to see if you're suited. And at the end of that time, again, there's another certificate and there's another ceremony. And you've successfully completed your course. You know, if you leave then, it's not something bad. And if you want to stay for the next course, again, you have to reapply. And at a certain point, it's at least 5 years. Then you can apply to be, you know, a full-time volunteer, and ISKCON's going to maintain you. And if you get sick or you get injured, ISKCON will take care of you. But not that they do that if you just stay for one. Because the average time, I think, in a temple is about 6 years. 5-6 years. Used to be. And now it's probably less, but used to be about 5-6 years. So you also have to be honest, what am I living in the temple for? How long am I living there? What am I coming for? And what's the role of the temples? You know, I think the role of the way we saw the role of the temples in the 70s or in the early 80s is not the same role that the temple has now. And these are the kind of things that we should really be very transparent about. What service is the temple providing for people? What service are people providing for the temple? Does that make sense? Yes.
Sometimes we see that in Russia or India, Krishna consciousness is very good, prospering, I'll probably say in English.
Expanding.
But we can see in Western countries, Europe and United States, it's a little bit stagnating. What is the main reason?
Oh boy, you're not going to like my answer. What's your evidence? What data have you collected, and how have you collected this data?
By observing that.
Observing what? Where? How many places? Over what period of time? What was your method of observation? What data did you collect? I'm sorry.
But we can see that in...
Who can see what? How many temples have you been to? Some idea? In the last how long?
3 years.
3 years, okay. So 10 temples in 3 years. And what do you call stagnating? How are you judging that?
That many new people come, like new devotees.
Come how?
On Sunday feast program or by... Or doing some program that people come.
So you're seeing that the Sunday feast people are not coming?
This is one reason, but...
How are you judging? What's the criteria are you using to judge?
That members of Krishna consciousness are increasing, that more than...
How do you know this? I'm not saying you're wrong, I just want to know how you know.
That they come to the temple and they practice. They chant 16 rounds.
But how do you know how many people are chanting 16 rounds?
If they associate and come to temple, you can...
Come to temple when? Mangal Aarti, Sunday feast?
Right, to visit anytime.
To visit anytime. So no one's coming to the temples? Or very few?
They're coming, but some temples, they have Sunday feasts. Every Sunday feast, more people, newcomers, students, who are interested. So some temples, they're just the same people.
Okay. So there are some temples that just have the same people coming.
Yes.
Okay. I really don't know, and I don't think anybody knows, except for God. I really do not know how many people are taking up Krishna consciousness now in various places. I do know that some temples I visit, the temples are dead. Just dead. In Mangal Aarti, there's the pujari. And that's all. And me, because I'm there. So, I mean, I've been to temples that it's just me and the pujari. And there's lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of deities. I was recently at a temple like that. There were many sets of deities on the altar, and then there was a whole bunch more deities in a little room off the altar. And one person was the pujari, and that person was doing all the cleaning, all the cooking, everything. Sunday feast, we got about 20, 30 people. But they said there was the same people coming all the time. Okay, so some temples are like that, and some temples, there's not even room to go in the temple room in the Sunday feast. I mean, you go to Bhaktivedanta Manor, and there's easily 50 to 70 people from Mangal Aarti every day. Easily. And the temple room, you can't even practically get in the temple room on a Sunday. And every Aarti, there's people there. Every Aarti, during the day, all five Aartis, or all seven Aartis, really. There's always people, and there's always programs going on, and there's always people visiting, and there's always people becoming devotees, and that's in the West. So I don't really know. And I see that a lot of the preaching now is moving out of temples. So if you're just judging by temples, you're missing most of it.
Get something more about these things, about this point of city, they go out.
Yeah, I mean, there's one city I visit where in the temple there's two people, and at a householder's house a half an hour away there's 50 or 60 coming for programs. So the temple's dead, but Krishna consciousness isn't dead. You know, and I go to many, many cities where Krishna consciousness is spreading much more outside of the temples. Or at least as much. So there's a lot of people making devotees in their homes. And then there's a lot of places where there's no temple, and there's people preaching in their homes and making devotees. And when people become devotees now, they often don't move into a temple. They often stay outside. So it's very hard to judge. I would say that Krishna consciousness is not growing at the same rate, in the same way that it was in 1978.
But what is then the role of the temple? Then it's better that...
That is a very good question.
That we hire one house, five with brahmacharis, and
that
sell
this... That is a very good question.
Because people should come to temple to render service to deities.
There's an article I wrote that's on Dandavats and ISKCON.com that says, what is ISKCON, what is a member of ISKCON that you might want to read? Because I teach ISKCON history and sociology of religions, and we used to be called sociology of ISKCON. And we look at the development of ISKCON. So I've been asking myself and anybody else who's interested that what do we envision as the role of ISKCON if Mahaprabhu's movement was taken over the whole world? So let's say that we're in the golden age and Mahaprabhu's movement is taking over the world. What's ISKCON? Now, my first answer is, I don't know. And that's a very liberating answer, by the way. It gives you space. And then you can say, well, is ISKCON going to be the world government? Is the GBC chairman going to be the emperor of the world? And you laugh, and the GBC all laugh too when I ask that question. So if that's not where we're going, then maybe we need to change some things. It's almost as if we're acting as if that's where we're going, but we don't really want to go there, which is very peculiar. Does that make sense to you? So then the next question is ISKCON going to be the world church? Just like in the Middle Ages, the Roman Catholic Church was the church. And if you were born in Europe, you were automatically a member of the Roman Catholic Church. Will ISKCON be the world church? Will ISKCON be the only branch of the Chaitanya tree? Is another way of asking that question. Will ISKCON be one of many churches? Will we be one of many spiritual organizations? My guess is that that's probably what it will be. All right, if that's what we will be, what will ISKCON be? Will we be running communities and cities and countries? Will ISKCON be running them? Will the GBC be in charge of countries? Or will there be people trained in ISKCON running countries? I don't know. I think these are things we have to think about. Because if ISKCON is going to run countries, then we're going to do social welfare work. Because that's what it means to run a country. That's what kings do. They build roads, they build hospitals, they take care of water supplies and electricity and... Now, if that's not ISKCON's business, then what will we be? Where are we going? Where do we want to go? I'm not saying I have the answers. I'm saying we should talk about it and think about it, because we're a lot more likely to do the right thing now if we have some idea of where we're supposed to be going. What did Srila Prabhupada envision as the identity of ISKCON as Mahaprabhu's movement is spreading? Mahaprabhu's movement is definitely spreading. I don't think you can deny that. And not just by ISKCON. There's a whole lot of people out there chanting Hare Krishna that are not ISKCON. Now, whatever we may think of the potency of it, they are doing that. They really are. We may like that or not like that, or think it's good or think it's bad, or think they're all apasampradaya. I don't know, but they're doing it. They really are. I mean, all these... Kirtan is becoming very popular. And we're not the only kirtan people anymore, just if you didn't know that. So Mahaprabhu's movement is definitely spreading. And it's, you can go to little towns and villages and find devotees. Sometimes the destruction of a temple increases the spreading of Krishna consciousness. Sometimes when the center collapses, then everybody moves out. Like Lord Ramachandra, he sent his brothers out to preach. He didn't want them all to stay in Ayodhya. So sometimes if we have a successful temple, then everybody clusters. And when it collapses, everybody leaves. And then someone starts a preaching project over there, and someone starts a preaching project over there. So don't always think about things in a stereotype way. But yeah, some temples are pretty dead. That's true. I go to some temples where it's just like, what is this temple doing? And others are full of life. And then many people are starting to practice in their own homes. We are definitely not growing in the way we were growing in 1978. That's definitely for sure. Where we were having temples where 300 people were living in the temple. I mean, there was a certain euphoria to that, but that's not really sustainable. I mean, I remember my mother saying to me, okay, so you outsell your books, and then people read your books, and they live in the temple, and all they do in the temple is sell books, and then those people come and live in the temple, and you're going to make the whole world living in a temple, and then who will they sell books to? She said, what's your vision? And I thought, oh, what an envious materialist. But she was right. So that's the best I can do for right now. I mean, this is a really deep discussion of the sociological development of ISKCON. And one thing I do when I teach ISKCON history is I say that ISKCON history is not monolithic, that ISKCON history in one country is not the same as ISKCON history in another country. I mean, if you go to a part of the world where they had leadership problems over and over and over again, you'll find a different experience than if you go to a part of the world where they never really had leadership problems. It's just very different. How people think, how people feel, how they behave, how ISKCON is developed is quite different. Does that make sense? And in the places where they never had leadership problems, they almost don't believe that they happened other places. They'll say things to me like, well, that stuff didn't really happen, did it? Yeah, it did.
But for example, Russian, they really explain that another part is not like this. And just for speaking. Like example, in the festival, when I'm in the Mayapur, it's like...
It's like half story. Russians, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a Moscow, you know.
A lot of Croatians become devotees. I don't know what it is, something in the water there. Everywhere I go, there's devotees from Croatia. Doesn't matter where you go in the world, there's somebody, there's people from Russia and people from Croatia. It's a little country. But they don't all stay in Croatia. They spread out and populate the whole ISKCON.
Like myself.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you'd have that far from Croatia, but I mean, if you go further, even if you move further away, it's just sort of interesting. So why are we so successful at preaching in Croatia? And why do so many of the Croatians leave Croatia and work in ISKCON other places? I don't know. You could do a research study. And then it just depends how you want to define successful preaching. So suppose you go to a temple in America where for a festival they get 1,000 people, but they're all Indian. Is that successful or not? And the Indians are getting initiated and they're following and they're not just like Hindus. They're actually becoming ISKCON members and they're becoming Gaudiyas. They're actually following. Is that successful or not? How do you want to define success? If the temple's very empty, but there's hundreds and hundreds of devotees in the community who are doing their own devotee businesses and their own preaching projects, and is that successful or not? That's another problem. How do you define success? What are you looking for?
I agree with you, but sometimes we put too much endeavor, you know, to establish what it was like in the 70s, that temple is the... Why we don't do
I don't
our
know.
Service and then...
I don't know why we do that.
Or
it's
just
foolish.
Simple service and then leave to, like, congregation and to their own.
Anyway, some places are stuck in a time warp. You go to some places and you're thinking, when do they think they're living? It's really interesting. Yeah. Do they still think it's 1974? But this is much too big of a discussion to have at 7:45 at night. I mean, look, the class on ISKCON history, we don't teach that anymore, but that's, you know, it was a 30-hour class, and sociology is another 30-hour class. So it's not the kind of thing you can just talk about in 5 or 10 minutes. But I think these are it's good that we're asking these questions. I think it's very important that we avoid some sort of generalization that's not backed up by data and research. Well, this is happening here and this is happening there. You'll find that most things not backed up by data and research are negative. You understand? Krishna consciousness in the West is stagnating, as if that's sort of a blanket truth. That's not a blanket truth. There are many places in the West where Krishna consciousness is not stagnating. Some places where it is, some places where it's going down, some places where it's going up, some places where it's going up in various ways. And then to really think about, where do we want to go? What do we want ISKCON to be? What role does the temple have? How do we want to develop a society? I think we've done really well at ICON and really badly at the ISKCON. We've really done well with international Krishna consciousness. We haven't done really well with the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And I'd like to see us start developing a society. I think that's the best I can do for right now. But it's good to talk about it. Talk about it. Think about it. Pray about it. Yes?
I want to just mention that Prabhupada mentioned that Manipur could be first state in the world, like Krishna consciousness.
Could.
They have some culture there and tradition. Yes.
But does that mean... Okay, so let's say Manipur becomes the first Krishna conscious state. Does that mean ISKCON is running it? What does that mean? Was that Prabhupada's intention? Was Prabhupada's intention that ISKCON devotees be running it? Or was Prabhupada's intention that ISKCON be running it? And those are not the same thing. Correct? Do you have projects right here in Ljubljana that are run by ISKCON devotees but not run by ISKCON? Yes. So what was Prabhupada's intention? These are things that we need to talk about. These are new things that we need to look at. Or was Prabhupada's intention that not even ISKCON devotees would run it? People in Manipur are also Vaishnavas. They're also in the Gaudiya line. They may be other branches of the tree. Was Prabhupada's intention that ISKCON devotees would help run it? I'm not saying I have the answers, but I'm saying these are things that we should think about and talk about. And because otherwise we just go without knowing where we're going, which is, if you don't know where you're going, you might not get there. Yeah.
Well, I read somewhere in Prabhupada's book, don't ask me where.
Okay, I won't ask you where. Where did you
he wrote that it's not possible for everyone to become Krishna conscious, but if they are devotees in a state, that's very auspicious.
Yes, Prabhupada actually would say that a lot, that just if a certain percentage of people become Krishna conscious. And yet we talk about Mahaprabhu's movement taking over the world. So again, what would that mean? What would it look like? Do we believe, and again, I'm not giving an answer, I'm just asking a question. Do we believe that everyone on this planet is going to be following the four regulated principles?
I don't believe it.
We have a hard enough time to get our initiated devotees to follow all four regulated principles for their whole lives, if we're going to be honest. I don't think we can say that 100% of people who've taken initiation follow the four regulative principles for their whole life. I don't know what the percentage is, but it isn't 100. And we can't even say 100% of people who take the vows and are still devotees, they haven't left Krishna consciousness, strictly follow their initiation vows for them. Again, I don't know what the percentage is, but I know it's not 100. So how are we going to get the whole population to do it? I mean, maybe if there's like some catastrophe and 9/10 of the population dies, we have really small population. I don't know. So, but what's our vision? I mean, Mahaprabhu's vision is going to happen anyway, whether we participate in it or not, and whether we're intelligent participants in it or not. But the more we can try to meditate on what Mahaprabhu's vision is and what Srila Prabhupada's vision is, I think the more chance that we're going to participate in it intelligently. So what do we see our role as? And this would help us to develop our temples and develop our preaching.
Yeah. I can give one example.
Okay.
When I was on Harinams, and people around would walk and they would say, those Hare Krishnas, they just chant Hare Krishna because they don't know anything else. Mm. But I noticed that everybody who was walking was saying Hare Krishna.
Mm.
So, and you know, when I was chanting, and I was thinking, just walking back and forth, you know, thinking, nobody cares, nobody's interested, nobody likes it. So how we are doing it? Nobody likes it. So I thought that it is, even though they don't like it, they heard Hare Krishna. And I don't think we are aware of the power of the holy name. So in next lifetime, they might go walk around and see the devotees chanting Hare Krishna and like it.
Mm.
And so
gradually over some lifetimes.
So after some time, they might become, after a few lifetimes, they may join. I see it as a long process, and when they see their spiritual life already started, but it may take, if you look at the longer picture, you know.
It's very nice. Especially if we're looking at 10,000 years, which is a much longer time than any of us can imagine, by the way. If we build a building that's going to last for 200 years, we think it's a really big accomplishment. So yes, it may go also that way. That we are gradually building people's devotional sukriti. And so the population of the earth may change considerably from that over time.
I think it makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. Yes.
For me, it's much more like, it will be like this. And
something gradually coming like that.
We have to be patient.
Mm-hmm.
Well, whether we're patient or not, you know.
So, like I said, that devotee, one of the qualities of devotee is that he's patient.
Yes.
Even though he may not attain love for Krishna this lifetime, he waits for next one.
But not too patient. You have to be enthusiastic. So.
Yeah.
Not just sleeping. Oh, I'll get love of God sometime. But I also see that people are taking up Krishna consciousness without necessarily moving into temples and becoming, you know, I'm seeing this everywhere. At the temple I recently visited, where there was only me and the pujari, I also met a woman who's been practicing Krishna consciousness for 20 years and never lived in a temple. And the temple I was visiting was the closest temple to her home, and she had never been there. Not once. Until the time I was there. That was her first visit. And that was the closest temple to her home. And she'd been practicing Krishna consciousness for 20 years. There's people like that. There's a lot more than you think. Now, some of them are doing things that are a little odd. So I once ended up, long story, in a very remote part of the world. And one of my godbrothers and his wife lived there, so they invited me to stay with them. And they had really fallen from their practices, like really, 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 really. If I had known, anyway, I didn't. So, you know, I tried to do what I could. And they invited me to speak at a local Indian temple while I was there, which was nice, Hindu temple. But then they also had a gathering of the devotees in the area. This was a very remote place. So maybe 15 devotees gathered. And it was definitely a little funny. It was the first kirtan I participated in where they not only sang Hare Krishna, but they sang some Shiva songs. I was like, what in the world? But it was interesting that there were these, you know, it was nowhere. It was completely a nowhere place. And they were having kirtans, and they were offering their food, and they were reading Prabhupada's books. And I have that kind of experience a lot. That devotees are in little, you know, sometimes they're people who were trained in ISKCON and then they're off somewhere, and other times it's people who were never trained in ISKCON and they just read Prabhupada's book somewhere and they don't really have much training and they don't really know anything and they don't really know what they're doing. But they're trying to do something. You know, they don't quite get it right. It's a little funny, but they're trying. So that's, it's, I find it quite interesting. Yes, Ruth. Yeah. And again, they may be doing things a little funny. But they're trying. So this is, there's a lot more of that than we see. A lot more. And it's very interesting. And it's those sort of things have led me to conclude that I don't really know how Mahaprabhu is going to spread his movement. That it's not just in the things that I can see immediately. Yeah.
I have another question.
Yeah.
So we spoke before about like we need to develop our relationship with Krishna and we can do this through reading, etc. So we have so many Prabhupada's books, but we also have all sorts of other books translated, like the Goswami literatures and the Gita Govinda and that kind of
thing. Gita Govinda? There's no, you don't have a translation. Just letting you know, you don't have.
Yeah, anyway, I mean, like, that's sort of like the end of the book. Just like elevated stuff. So sometimes devotees read this and we hear all sorts of different opinions about this.
Do you want to know my opinion? Okay, first read all of Prabhupada's books. So before you touch the books of the Goswamis and often which don't have purports, make sure you've read all of Srila Prabhupada's books. I don't mean necessarily mean you have to read every one of the little ones, but at least Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna book, Nectar Devotion, Ishopanishad. At least all those, at least once. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati at Radhakund told his disciples, you know, you can start looking at these things after you've been chanting for at least 10, 15 years. So say, if you've been following strictly and chanting for at least 10, 15 years, you've read all of Srila Prabhupada's books, and I'd also say, please listen to Prabhupada's lectures and Prabhupada's conversations, because you will get insights from the lectures and conversations you don't get from the books and vice versa. In the lectures and conversations, Prabhupada's applying the books to particular audiences and particular circumstances. And you get a certain flavor of Srila Prabhupada you don't get just by reading the books. And then keep reading Prabhupada's books. It's not that, okay, now I've read all of Srila Prabhupada's books, now I'm going to read, you know, Lalita Madhava and Ujjwala Nima Mani and forget about reading Bhagavad Gita. So keep reading Srila Prabhupada's books. I mean, you don't have to read anything but Srila Prabhupada's books ever. Prabhupada told Jamuna in London early in the movement, before even very many books were written, he said, I've already given you enough to go back to Godhead. So it's not necessary. But Prabhupada wanted more books to be translated and he wanted more books to be written also. Prabhupada directly said we should write books ourselves, plus translate these books, so that's something that Srila Prabhupada wanted. It doesn't necessarily, you know, if you're just happy reading Bhagavad Gita, that's not a problem. You can go back to Godhead reading Bhagavad Gita. You don't have to read anything else. Prabhupada said, you know, if you read one line in the Krishna book, you can become perfect. But I would beg people, please, don't be reading these other books until you've been strictly following at least 10, 15 years and until you've read all of Srila Prabhupada's books. That's my own personal opinion. You can do whatever you like. I mean, I'm not saying that my opinion is Shastra. I'm just... You asked my opinion, that's my opinion. You should really know Srila Prabhupada's books. I mean, his other books are wonderful. It's not that there's anything wrong with them. We're very happy that people are translating. Be careful what translations you use also. All translations are not equal. So just because something's sold at, you know, Ras Bihari Lal in Vrindavan doesn't mean it's something you want to read. So do be careful. The view of the translator is going to... Is that all right? Okay, we have time for, I think, one more. And then anything else? Yes.
But we also, when we were doing Srila Prabhupada marathon, one devotee met one lady, 24 years, his hair cutter, she's hair cutter. She made her japa mala and she's offering the boga, and she's maybe 10 kilometers from temple, but she never been in temple.
Yeah, there's people. There's people like that, a lot more than we think. Anybody else have any other questions? Yes?
Can you say something about Shiksha outside ISKCON?
Can I say something? I'm sure that most of us take some instruction from somebody who's not in ISKCON about something. I don't think there's very many people who take all their instructions about every single thing they do in their life just from someone else in ISKCON. Many devotees read books on management and leadership or on counseling or... You know.
Deepak Chopra.
What?
Deepak Chopra.
Or, you know, I remember when Prabhupada was on the planet, we had this real heavy mood in most temples that you could only read Srila Prabhupada's books, you couldn't read any other book. So we had this book called Fascinating Womanhood, How to Be a Good Wife. It was written by one Christian lady. And we secretly passed it around from one woman to the other. But it was a very helpful book. I'm very grateful to the author of that book. So the problem becomes when, just like if you're in a university, so no matter how many other universities there are, if you want to get a degree from that university, you have to do things in the way that university does them. It's not saying that other universities are bogus. I mean, there are bogus universities. But if you go into your professor and you're saying, you know, okay, well, the professor in this other university does it this way, so that may be a problem. So there's some value to loyalty. I personally feel uncomfortable with loyalty in a nationalistic sense. Just again, speaking for myself, I don't like patriotism and football team loyalty. I find that kind of loyalty, for me, other people maybe they like it, but I don't like it. I don't like, this is my team, rah, 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 let's beat your team. I just kind of like, bleh. No, it doesn't do anything for me. Never did, never will. But I think there's a value to loyalty in terms of gratitude. And just common sense, you know. If I'm teaching you mathematics and I have a certain textbook and I have a certain syllabus and you're my student and you come to me and you say, well, why can't I follow this person's syllabus and this person's textbook? Then I'll say, then go follow them. You want to be my student or not? I mean, look, each of us is free to do whatever we want. We're all individuals. We can do whatever we want. for me, just speaking for me, okay? I can't speak for anybody else or anything else. I'm happy with Srila Prabhupada. I'm happy. I've never had any interest in... I just don't have any interest. I'm satisfied. You know, it's like my mother already makes good meals. Why do I have to eat out? I get what I need at home. I'm satisfied. All respect to anybody who worships Krishna in any form, in any name, in any way, and wonderful. And you know, I can learn something. I can learn something from the Muslims and the Christians and the Jews and the Buddhists and the... And I can learn something from the Sri Vaishnavas, and oh, I might be able to learn something from other Gaudiya Vaishnavas too. What a thought. But I'm happy at home. No? So if someone isn't happy at home, what to say? I can't. I personally, I don't feel comfortable with going to people and saying, you're not loyal. I don't like it. It's not who I am, it's not what I am, it's not what I want to be. I find it very uncomfortable. I think that's something, that's not something for me to say. That's something for Prabhupada and Krishna to say, to talk with them about. Do you understand? I can speak in principle. I mean, Prabhupada told us not to go to Lali Prasad, who is Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's brother. He said, because although the differences between him and Bhakti Siddhanta are spiritual, you'll think it's material and you'll commit offenses. So, you know, we have to be careful. Also, part of my own mentality, and I'm speaking for myself, is I only need to be discriminating as far as who I'm going to associate with for my own spiritual life. I don't have to discriminate as to who... I just don't have to in my service. I mean, maybe if you have another service, you have to. But for me, in my service, I don't have to decide whether this group is bona fide and this group is bona fide. I just don't have to make that decision. It's not necessary for me. It doesn't matter to me. I might decide, well, I don't want to listen to this person, or I do want to listen to that person. But I feel that way even about people in ISKCON, by the way, if I'm going to be really honest. Just because someone's a member of ISKCON doesn't mean I want to hear from them. Sorry. Some people in ISKCON, I'm like, John, all obeisances to you. But I'm not going to hear from you. For various reasons. But it's not that I'm going to decide, well, are they a bona fide devotee? It's not my business. Why do I need to decide that? That's somebody else's business, but it's not mine. And that way I can just be happy. Is that all right? We could talk about this further, but I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to offend any Vaishnavas, so I don't want to say that person's bogus, because how do I know? And I don't want to take the time to find out whether or not that person's bogus, because I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. If someone preaching over there that way, you know, what does it matter? I mean, if I have to decide, am I going to go to their classes, am I going to read their books, am I going to go to their kirtans, then I have to decide. But unless I'm going to do those things, why do I have to decide? And I've got plenty of prasadam in my own family. I am not hungry. If someone thinks they're hungry, I don't know what to say. But I'm not hungry. I find lots and lots and lots of wonderful, wonderful devotees in ISKCON. Not everybody, but many. So many. And Prabhupada's books are wonderful. I mean, Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says there's many branches of the Chaitanya tree. I just read this morning that Prabhupada was saying about the branches of Madhvaita Acharya, that how some of the branches, they're still producing bona fide acharyas. I have a very good friend in Vrindavan who's a member of the Nityananda Parivar. She's American. And somehow she found out about Krishna consciousness through some member of the Nityananda line. Wonderful person. So there are many branches of the Chaitanya tree. Also it says that each branch will have many, many hundreds of sub-branches. And ISKCON's one of the branches. Now that's something to think about. Over and over again, Krishna Das Kaviraj says, each branch will have hundreds of sub-branches. And I thought, okay, ISKCON's a branch. That means we're going to have hundreds of sub-branches. What are we going to do about that? It's like, whoa. So for me, Mahaprabhu can figure out which are his good branches and which are not his. I'm not the gardener. I don't have to worry about it. Somebody else has to worry about it. I was trained very, I really try to be careful who I hear from. And if I'm not sure, I don't do it. No. If somebody's speaking and they can't quote Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, I was once ordered by my GBC to attend the meetings of some other Gaudiya group who were coming to our community and find out what they were doing. I went as a spy. I mean, it was a pretty open spy. They all knew I was there as a spy. So this one devotee was talking on and on and on, telling all these, from all these books, you know, all these stories. And I said, Prabhu, these are wonderful stories. Where are they from? What's your source? He never answered me. Finally, when I asked the next day, I kept saying, what's your source? What's your source? And he says, oh, I go around Vrindavan and I ask the local Brijbasis for stories. Not for me. But I'm talking for me. You know, if you want to do that, that's okay. But I was trained not to do that kind of thing. That I have to know, where is it coming from? What's your source? Who said this? What acharya said this? Is it just your own realization? Then say that. Say, this is my realization. Okay, fine. So know where the sources are. Know what line you're connecting to. I think that's very important. All right, I think it's getting late. Not the subject I would like to end on. Anyway, I think it's getting late. Yes?
Please, Mataji, Vina, please come to visit us more often.
You have to talk to Panchatattva.
And pray.
I'm just a servant. But of course I'd always love to come back here. I love it in Slovenia. Always enthusiastic kirtans. So why do I like Slovenia? Very enthusiastic kirtans. You're a real kirtan center. And very caring devotees. And if you think things are stagnating, then go out and preach. Do something about it.
He's not even going to say
anything. Just like one time the devotees went to Prabhupada complaining, and they were saying, they're doing this, they're not doing this. And Prabhupada said, what is this they? He said, you are all they. So don't say they. That is bureaucracy. You are all they. So one of the things I did years ago is look in the mirror and say, I am also ISKCON. And if I don't like something, I can do something about it. So, there you go. Go do something wonderful. Why not? Thank you very much. All glories to Shiva Prabhupada.